So welcome everyone. Thank you for coming this morning. I know there was a day of mindfulness here yesterday. And so for those of you who went yesterday and came today, you can never get too much of a good thing. So thank you for coming. And for those of you who've never attended a day of mindfulness, I think we hold those monthly. And I certainly recommend they are a good opportunity to spend a day stepping back from your daily life and just focusing on cultivating an inwardness to our lives, a capacity to let go of all the externalities and just really be present to that which is most essential, which is really the condition of our own mind and our capacity to live fully present to life as it unfolds. So before I give the teaching today, since I know this is, I'm not going to be teaching in June, so this may be the last time I'm here for 4 or 5 weeks, I want to ask if there are any questions. If anybody has any questions about Dharma, mindfulness, meditation, and equally about our life and how do we apply these teachings and practices that have such a capacity to really end suffering and to really produce a state of well-being and serenity in one's life. The capacity to practice that is often not clear or problematic. So if anybody has any questions in any other area, please don't be shy. It's important that we be able to talk openly with one another. Yes.
I heard, or rebel, the liberation from the equality complex.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to know.
You always thought that was a good thing, eh? No. Well, again, that verse is really, again, if you're familiar with Buddhist teaching, the sense of self, the sense of individuation, the egocentricity of focusing on, you know, seeing the world through the prism of self, is considered, if not the major, at least one of the major causes of our suffering, of our unhappiness, of discord and conflict within and without in life. And so what that verse is really saying, that all the various stances that self may take in life, whether it sees itself better than all the other selves out there, or it sees itself worse than or less than all the selves out there, or sees itself as a self that's as good as all the others, that all those stances are stances of self. So that's what that's kind of encouraging us to not settle. I mean, often in Western psychology, the focus is to develop a good sense of self and get rid of a bad sense of self, which certainly from a developmental point of view, maybe better than. But from a larger view, all of these stances that rest on this fabrication about who I am and, you know, my relationship to everybody else is all just a mental fabrication and really gets in the way of our capacity to freely be in life with others. So does that make that clear? Good. Any other questions? Yes.
I found it difficult to stay in mindfulness when something more interesting comes along. And
so, such as what? I mean, I'm very interested.
Okay.
So I'm getting the signal too, because this is being recorded. So the question is, difficult to stay in mindfulness when something more interesting comes along. Good.
So this morning I drove over from St. Pete. I stayed relatively mindful.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Then I arrived and I parked.
Mm-hmm.
And I had put effort into trying to be mindful and concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I get out of my car and
mm-hmm.
walk to the car.
Mm-hmm.
But as I pulled up, a good friend pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
So she came to my car. I was delighted to see her. We've chosen not to drive together.
Mm-hmm.
So we started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I walked in, and I totally had no clue if I'd done that which I've been working on being mindful of that, which is simply to lock my car. I don't know how.
So you don't can't remember whether you locked your car or not?
Well, I figured I knew before I.
Okay, so that's not the criteria. The criteria is what happened.
How to stay
mm-hmm.
in that place that I worked on developing.
Yeah.
And also that's happening.
Can I ask you a question? So the question is about how does one stay in mindfulness and not get lost? So you're talking to me. Right now, and you are you really working on your mindfulness right now?
No.
But are you present to me? And to
I feel very present.
There. So, well, that's interesting. See, we tend to fabricate, reify mind states as something concrete, like. Being mindful, like that's a thing, you know. But mindfulness is not a thing, is it? Mindfulness is this. When I'm present to this, I am mindful. When I am not present to this and I'm lost somewhere else, I am not present to really what's going on inside me. I mean, I can be thinking, and if I'm aware that I'm thinking, I am mindful that I'm thinking. So, I mean, mindfulness is simply a light. Right? That shines on whatever it's directed at. Right? So when you're driving and you're just driving, right? We might call that, oh, you are mindful or aware, or right? When you see your friend, why do you know she's your friend? Because you're mindful. Right? It's not a thing. It's a marvelous attribute of our mind that we are not aware how to. You know, the reason we cultivate it is because we have lost the capacity to know how to use it. Is that clear? That's all we're doing here. So you see your friend. Wonderful. You're present. Have a good time. Right? Okay. So that's all. I mean, mindfulness is not like. A thing separate from life and your experience. Mindfulness is the capacity to be present to your experience. When you're driving, you're just driving. When you see your friend, you see your friend. When you're talking with your friend, you're just present to talking with your friend. Now, we get into the problem, right? Because when you stop talking to your friend and you walked into the Dharma hall, you didn't have mindfulness. You were where? Still maybe lost in the conversation or something like that. You see, that's the problem. The practice is, how can I learn to just live life in the present moment? Right? Instead, we often are dragging. One of the things we do, we drag experiences. Like, we can't just be with a friend. And when we say goodbye and go in the meditation hall, we're just in the walking into the meditation hall, totally present. We drag it along, right? We just keep dragging it along. And that's why people get stressed, and that's why the people have trouble sleeping, and that's why people have these busy minds, because they just go, you know, they wake up, and already they start churning, and then they go through the day, and they keep adding it on. But they keep carrying along one experience after the other, and by the end of the day, you know, the mind is just flooded with all the things, you know, that's gone. But the truth is, everything that has gone on in the day is over, isn't it? I mean, all we're carrying is some kind of mental fabrication of thought and imagery that is just going on in our minds. It's not going on in reality, right? So basically, you see your friend, you have a nice interchange, and then you're walking up the steps. but somehow we feel like we have to milk experience. You know, I got to keep repeating it. Which I was really nice to see so and so. I mean, like who's listening to you? It's like we have these conversations as if, you know, like we have to, you know, let me tell somebody about it. Right? As if it doesn't become real until we have this conversation, and then we over and over again. The problem with that way of using our minds is we don't always do it in pleasurable experiences. We also do it when we have unpleasurable experiences, when we have bad interchanges with people. We do the same thing. You know, and you can't have it both ways. You see, we don't realize that it's just the way we've used our minds and therefore trained it that we again have lost this capacity, which we all have, to live in the present. Which just means, you know, it's like for many people, you know, if they don't have the auto commentary, you know, like on DVDs now they have a section where you can hear the somebody comment on it while you're watching it. I mean, that's what many people do. They always have a little auto-commentary going on in their life, explaining things, giving their impressions of things, right? Interpreting things, right? As if there's somebody who's watching or listening. It's just us. That may be a rude awakening for some people. There's nobody else in our mind but us. Right? There's no audience. Nobody's rating us. Nobody really cares. I mean, that's the truth. And yet, you know, from something that we began in childhood and it's just, you know, people feel kind of lonely or they feel kind of dull if they don't have this commentary. You know, life as it is not enough for us, right? You know, it's like, it's, you know, life isn't real. I'm not real. My experience isn't real unless I can tell somebody about it, text somebody about it, Facebook somebody about it, Instagram somebody about it. Or if I can't do any of that, at least I can tell myself about it, right? Then I become real. Right? Then my experience is real. It has meaning, good or bad. But what this is about here is saying, no, none of that's real. That's all just self-fabrication. What's real is life. And we want to be able to be as present to our driving, to our listening, to our being with people, to our walking upstairs, to be present to our body, our emotions, our thoughts, our feelings, and meditation. Same. That's the practice of mindfulness. That's the practice of awareness, right? And we learn over time that life just in and of itself is good, that all experience is good, and that if I can just be present to the experience that I'm going through, and then when I go on to the next one, not keep dragging, I won't feel stressed by life. I won't be stressed by relationships. I won't have all kinds of, you know, people say, I feel heavy. Well, of course we feel heavy. Our minds are heavy because they're overworked and they're burdened with endless repetition of stories and emotions that all have passed, about experiences that have passed. Am I right? Or they're about, or worry or anxiety, it's all about experiences that haven't happened. And yet we are constantly kind of consuming this poor mind of ours with this endless repetition. And sometimes it's good, but sometimes it will not be good. And you can't have it both ways. If the mind is used to carrying stuff, it'll just keep carrying everything. If the mind is used to obsessing about good experiences, it will obsess about bad experiences. Okay? That's the way it's been conditioned. So in meditation and mindful living, all these things we're learning, we are learning to recondition our mind. Right. The same way it was conditioned to be the way it is because of decades of the way we used it, we are now learning to use it differently. And so we can recondition it, and we will end up with a very different kind of mind. This is a path of transformation. Right? Transformation means the form will change. Is that clear? This is not a path of what? Of becoming, of coping better. Again, there's nothing wrong with, if you can't cope, learning how to cope. It's certainly, you know, there's nothing wrong, if you're a bad driver, learning how to be a better driver. You'll be better and the world will be better. But this is a path of transformation. It's about really changing, really the quality and the content of our experience. Right? Through ongoing practice. Is that?
I still don't know how I
could remember from
locking the car.
Maybe I missed it. So the question is about locking the car. Oh, I thought it was about. Oh. Well, it was an interesting answer, anyhow. So. A little embarrassing, but go on. So your question is... Okay, so you're mindful up to driving in the parking lot, then you see your friend, and you forget to lock your car.
Something I've really worked in trying to be mindful to lock my car.
Uh-huh.
Like it's something I've put effort into, but then it was superseded.
Right. And so you want to know, how can you not forget to lock your car? That's really all you want to know. It's very practical. Have you ever thought of a sticky or something? I mean, I think practical issues often need just very practical responses.
And it really is when something becomes bigger than that immediate thing.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I would say. Yeah, concentrate on if locking the car or forgetting to lock the car is a major concern of yours, right? Because you find yourself not locking your car and walking away?
Yes, I'm not knowing the lock.
Right. So again, you want to what? Develop a very clear protocol in your life for how you exit your car. And you want to create a pathway in your mind whereby you are doing that both through the activity of doing it, slowing down and really naming what you're doing. I mean, this mind can be trained and retrained. So again, you can be just more mindful. I got to be much more mindful, let's say, in exiting my car. Really, you know, I am now opening the door, and I am now, exiting, and I'm now locking it. So you really begin to bring more concentrated awareness to these little actions, right? Or you begin to go and give yourself a mental post-it always, you know, have I locked my car? And you really begin to, I mean, a lot of these little tricks or devices that we use, we can use to change lots of behaviors, right? So, but again, these little areas of our life just need special attention. And we shouldn't think they just change by themselves, just because we want them to change, right? Things change when we have real clear intention and we have a clear way of going about it, whether it's transforming our mind or transforming our life to have healthy eating habits or, you know, other kinds of things, or remembering to lock our car, or, right? I mean, so there's nothing wrong with really being much more clear and specific about the changes we want to make, small ones, big ones, other kinds of habits, and really being clear about how I go about doing that. I mean, that's the way you change. You don't change by wanting to change. Wanting to change just brings you to the door of change, right? But if you want to change, you have to have a real plan of how you're going to go through that door and how you're going to deal with what's on the other side, right? But you all know that. So forgive me for going on and on about such an important issue. Yes.
I guess I need to clarify. It kind of came to me through the whole wonderful answer to the other question you just eloquently spoke. The perception I got from all this was thinking about being mindfulness gets in the way of actually being mindful.
Right.
What I'm doing is thinking about it, but being mindful, being mindful, and this and all the time. It's cultivating a mind that is already mindful, and I communicated to a conversation I had last night with your friend. I just got back from the trip and sat down. And it's always kind of been like the whole world is true. There's nothing within a small circle in that spectrum. I was thinking about my mother, my dog, my cow, in my backyard, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, so mindfulness.
I'm forcing myself to be mindful, and there's no way I can be mindful. Is that correct?
Well, again, it is, though, the question is thinking about mindfulness and planning mindfulness, isn't that just getting in the way of being mindful?
Okay.
Right. And also, you said, you gave the example of talking to friends about something that was important to you and how mindfulness was just naturally there. Again, it's the same kind of conversation I had with Nancy in the beginning, which is, you know, we're having this conversation, you're very present to me. Mindfulness is present. It is a natural aspect of our mind, but at this point it happens randomly. Right? And practice is taking that which is random and making it consistent because it's a good thing. Now, again, you're absolutely right. You know, talking about, thinking about, reading about mindfulness is not the same as practicing it. And, you know, you don't get any benefit from just talking, reading, thinking. All you're getting from that, you know, is it's pointing you in the direction of. So in that sense, that it could be helpful, but we don't want to, as it's said in Zen, we don't want to confuse the finger for the moon. You know, the finger that's, you know, where's the moon, and you point, right? The finger's not the moon, right? The finger is pointing to that. Is that clear? It's a very famous analogy, and there's a koan, which gets even more interesting. But so words point us. Ideas point us, right? All the reading we do and discussions we do and spiritual this and that, you know, they point us towards something. But if we want to experience it, we have to live it. We have to do it. So, yeah. So all of this, even what we're doing now, these words, you know, every word I've spoken today has disappeared. There's not a trace of it. That's just the truth, isn't it? Everything you have thought already today and since you've been here this morning has disappeared. Right? You know, the result, if there's any positive result that comes out of this interchange this morning, is that you will take it into how you carry on in your life. Right? Or else it will have no positive result. I mean, maybe it could have a little bit. But, you know, these are all, we're trying to reseed the mind. And our readings and our discussions and attending Dharma talks and things like that are to put new seeds in the mind. But as we've heard many times, the seeds will not grow unless they are cultivated. Right? They need to be taken care of. So many of us have spent many years collecting spiritual Dharma seeds, but we've been a little less consistent on taking care of them, so they will grow, nurturing, fertilizing. It's only when the seeds are given the right conditions, the warmth and the water and the light, that they will grow, right? Or else they just remain seeds. And many of us, probably everybody in here, has many good seeds, but many of them lie dormant, or many of them are small, because they don't get the cultivation. If you look at your mind, if you look at your life, and you see lots of conflict, lots of afflictions of various types, it's quite simple. It's because unconsciously that's what we've been cultivating. So they have grown. They're big. They're strong. Is that clear? It's not that there's anything wrong with us intrinsically. Many people think that they take it personally, all their stuff. Your stuff isn't personal. It's just stuff. It's like if you have a garden, you know, and it's full of ugly plants, right? That's just that. It's not you, right? I mean, as the gardener, you got to take a little responsibility, right? You know, you can't just go, I don't know. I mean, many people, you ask them, well, what do you really feel and think about this? And they go, what? Oh, I don't know. You know, my response all is, let me get this straight. You have thoughts or feelings and things that are driving you in your life, and you have no idea what they're about? To me, that's a little dangerous, isn't it? It's like, you know, driving with your eyes closed. I don't know where I'm. You know, no wonder I have a lot of accidents, you know. Glad somebody finally told me you're supposed to open your eyes, you know, when you drive. Oh, that makes it easier. Right? I mean, many of us live our life in that way. Right? Our eyes are closed. We don't see what's in front of us. We don't see what's really going on around us. And we don't see what's going on within us. Right? Mindfulness, concentration, insight, all these tools of Buddhist meditation are giving us the tools to it, so we can live life with our eyes open, right? And we can deal with things, right? You know we have a garden. Oh, the garden is my mind. Oh, you know, I am the gardener of it. Oh, many seeds and plants have gotten in it in the past because I didn't know that was my responsibility. You see, we don't know that, right? We're taught earlier on, right, as children, and as parents, we teach our children what? You know, how to bathe themselves, and how to dress themselves, and how to brush their teeth, right? How to tie their shoes, right? We think this is our role as a parent, right? Kind of teach them how to take care of themselves. Right? To give our children self-care skills. Isn't that true? And then they go to school and that's all. But nobody ever tells them how to take care of their mind. Right? I mean, anybody have parents who kind of told them how to take care of your mind and self-care for your mind and your emotions and how important this was? I mean, if, I guess if I was making a choice of what to teach my children, I mean, I'd skip the tying shoes and teach them how to, you know, they can always slip in and out of them. Right? But I certainly want to teach them about their minds and emotions and thoughts and, you know, how they're related and how to cultivate positive seeds and how not to cultivate negative seeds and that they're the caretakers of, you know what I'm saying? Well, these are kind of like 101 kind of things. But again, we grow up in a society where that is not 101. And so we haven't known better. So it's not like we need to blame anybody else or we need to blame ourselves. That's just the way it is. But now, you see, now, I'll say it again, now that we are learning that when you drive, you keep your eyes open, we don't have an excuse anymore, do we? We've been told to keep our eyes open. And we've been told that the reason we get into accidents and fender benders is because we are closing our eyes. Oh. So now we have the knowledge of, and we have the tools. And so now it becomes our responsibility. You know, this mind of ours, just like my body, is my responsibility. In the same way I make sure that my body is clean, and I do my best to keep my body healthy, I have equal responsibility to keeping my mind clean and healthy. That's my job. We are caretakers. And when we become good caretakers of our own mind and body, we will be better able to help the minds and bodies of others, which is also our responsibility, isn't it? We are responsible for one another. But it's hard for us to be responsible for others if we are not truly responsible for ourselves. Right? If we only know how to take care of our gardens because we've read all the books, or we've been to the lectures, we can talk a good game, but that'll break down at a certain point. But when we've, been a gardener for many years, now we know how to take care of a garden. We know how to cultivate flowers and vegetables and plants. For someone who wants to learn about gardening, we can really help them, can't we? So this is important. Yes.
One of the things I struggle with is speaking the correct thing. What do you recommend as far as how to change the way you think? To think before you speak.
So you're saying that a lot of times you speak before you think, so therefore the things you say may not be most beneficial for the situation. And often the opposite happens. Okay, so that's good. I mean, it's good that you see that. You know, I mean, that's the beginning. There are many people, you know, a lot of people who do that, and they don't come to that conclusion that maybe there's something a little wrong with that. A little dangerous. You know, that's what I mean when I say that's good. That's the beginning of self-awareness, right? Oh, you know, it's like, it's not the fault of everyone else, is it? I have my stuff. I may be contributing to the suffering of others through my own words and my own. Okay, so that's good. That's really good. I mean, that's self-awareness. That's taking responsibility. What is your name?
Cassie.
See, the first thing I'd say to you, Cassie, is I'm a great believer in, those you've been here before, now I'm a great believer in duct tape. Okay. Probably not physical duct tape, but at least mental duct tape. Okay, which is if I am not sure or clear that the words I am about to speak will be helpful and beneficial to the situation, to the person, I will remain silent. I mean, you can see what a good beginning that is, just to give yourself permission to know I'm not sure what the right thing is to say, or you kind of know that the words that are beginning to form in your mind that you want to say may not be the most beneficial things to say. You kind of know it. And yet in the past, they still come out, right? Kind of. Shoo. So oftentimes, you know, see, that's kind of behavioral, right? You know what I'm saying? In the sense that no matter what's going on back there, how much you want to say it, if you can just, you know, if your mouth is duct taped, it's a good beginning. Okay, Cassie? It's a good beginning. Because at least now you know it's inside me. Okay? It's mine to take care of. And so I think it's very important, you know, in Buddhism we talk about transformation, the phrase is transforming the doors of body, speech, and mind. These are kind of the doors of life, right? We are in life through the activities of our body, we're in life through the activities of our mouth, and we're in life in the activities of our mind. And so, you know, paying attention to speech and words is very important. Because if you think about being a human being, we live much of our life in relationship with others, right? Families, friends, work, society, shopping, you know, I mean, we are talking, we're, you know. And so words are very important, right? And so if we want to no longer contribute to the suffering of the world or other people, we need to be very attentive to what we say, right? So I think to begin to understand that that's a very powerful vehicle, and that it has, you know, the power for good and the power for not so good. And so we begin to take more seriously our words, right? And to realize, you know, that's a whole other area that I need to really look at, right? You know, what are the effects of my words on others? Where are these words coming from? Are they coming from a good place? A place that really wants to heal, to be helpful, to be constructive, to be insightful? Or am I just, is it coming from a place of my own pain, of my own hurt, my own anger, my own, you know what I'm saying? What am I doing here? Am I just contributing and facilitating more gossip, more delusion, more nonsense, you know, more pettiness in the world, right? By my words, or am I standing for something else? So a lot of that is through my words. So I think it's very important that we begin to see what an important, you know, that this is not just just an opening, that we endlessly spew forth whatever, you know. I mean, it's one thing to have all kinds of thoughts in your mind. At least nobody knows that, right? I mean, it may be troubling to you, but at least, you know, it's sort of self-contained. You know, the nonsense or the garbage, a lot of it in our mind, how does it get out? It gets out through words, and it gets out through our actions. So we need to be very attentive to the actions of our body and speech, because this is really where the world of our mind and our emotions enters the world. Right? And so it often behooves us, you know, while we're getting this together, that we maybe are a little more attentive to what we say and what we do. You know, ideally, Cassie, if you keep the mouth closed, right, and you are attentive to what's going on in Cassie, you know, like, what am I really feeling, right? Where am I coming from in this conversation, right? What would be words that would be helpful here, that would bring clarity or understanding or compassion, right? You know what I'm saying? And that's, You'll learn that by that self-reflection, by seeing that words are causes and they will have effects. We all know that, right? Because we have all spoken in ways that have hurt others or muddied the waters or just continued delusion, conflict, anger, resentment, fear. I mean, we just, right? And we also probably, hopefully, know that sometimes our words can be beneficial, can be helpful, right? And, you know, I think ultimately we want to make a commitment that, you know, from now on, the words I speak will always, right? In the, when people become formally enters the Buddha's way, they take the five precepts or the five mindfulness trainings, and one of them is on right speech. And it really delineates clearly, you know, what positive speech is. And then we practice it. We train ourselves. So is that helpful?
I think so.
I mean, I was so off on this one, I'm just... just want to make sure that I didn't miss it completely.
No, I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah. I mean, it's... See, often people, we want somebody, well, tell me what to do, you know. And my sense is, no. First, we need to kind of be present to ourselves and really, you know, just stop and just be present. What's really going on here? You know, what's really going on inside me? And what do I want to do here? You know, sort of what do I want to do from my conditioned self? And what do I really know in my heart, maybe a better way of being in this situation, right? And kind of, we need to kind of learn that about ourselves, and that takes some silence, you know, some willingness to be with oneself, to just, you know, there are a lot of people who always want to get the last word, you know, they always want to be right. You know, they always want to be heard. You know, like it's all about me. But communication is, you know, it involves others, right? And if we don't learn to speak with a sense of the others and the situation and with a sense of our own, you know, values, it'll just be garbage. You know, we'll just be spewing more garbage into a world that's already filled with it, isn't it? Right. So, I mean, I'm a great supporter of right speech, compassionate speech, wise speech. Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Cassie. Are there other questions about practice? I know people here have questions. Don't be shy. Yes and yes, or yes and yeah. Were you pointing to her, or were you raising your hand? Well, I saw you first, so
okay.
So don't. But I will get to you. We have a few minutes. Yes.
So I have a job I've made that's very cerebral, so I spend all day in my head, and then thinking, labeling things, and so I just find it really hard to shut that off.
Mm-hmm.
When I get home, it's just
what is your name?
Kai.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, we have to acknowledge, right? Especially if we start reading these spiritual texts, right? That we live in a very different society and culture that many of these meditative traditions are developed in. And one of the things is that a lot of our work is much more cerebral than work in the past. We are not agriculturists. We are not laborers, you know, we're not factory workers, many of us, you know, just doing repetitive kind of things. Many, more and more people are working with their heads, which means there's much more stimulation, right? That's what you're saying. So your mind is stimulated all day, your thinking mind. As well as we have these whole gamut of electronic devices, right, that often stimulate us when we're not at work, right? So we're keeping, during our breaks and during our ride home and as soon as we come in the door, we are just plowing more information, more stimulation, right? So you can see the problem. right? So that's never going to work, is it? Okay. Now again, you have to accept that there is a certain degree of stimulation that goes on, and it's not just going to stop. Have you tried to stop it? You cannot. That's why people do what? They drink, they drug, they zone out in front of the TV. You know, they'll do anything they can, right, rather than deal with it. But you can't stop it. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh once gave the example. It's like if you're driving at 80 miles an hour and you put on the brake, you don't come to a blinding halt. Right, I don't know how many feet they'll tell you, you know, how fast you're going, but it'll take time before you actually, even though you put on the brake, before it stops. Right? So the question is, are you just stimulated by the thinking that goes on in your work, or are you stimulated a lot by the emotionality and the drama of what's going on in your work? Okay. Well, the stress is, again, something under your... Everything else is just information that you're dealing with, processing, right? But that emotional reaction is all you in that sense. And that you can control. Because, again, it's like this, okay? If you... what was it like? It's like, you know, if you have a small space, right, and you're trying to push a lot of something through it, it'll get very constricted, and it'll also get very fast. Let's say like water, right? If you got a lot of water over here and you have a half-inch pipe, whoosh, right? On the other hand, if you have the same amount of water, but you have a 3-foot pipe, right? It's much more room for it to go through, not as fast. Right? Is that clear? The same way the example often is, if you put an ounce of salt in a glass, it will be taste what? Very salty. But if you put that same ounce of salt in a bathtub and drank it, this is before you got in. How would it taste? You probably wouldn't even taste the salt. Is that clear? So it is cultivating a relaxed mind, an open mind, a spacious mind that allows things to come and go. But we don't let things come and go. We grab, we obsess, we confabulate, right? And oftentimes, we don't realize that it's not just the thinking that's been going all the day, it's the way I relate to the thinking. Does that make sense? And that you have control over. So, you know, learning to just be mindful, what exactly do you do?
I work with that.
And what exactly?
Research.
Okay, so you're just researching. I mean, you're reading things and you're... I don't know. You're reading things and you're writing things and you're reading things and you're writing things and you're reading things and you're writing things. Is that kind of it? I mean, that's all you're doing. No? I mean, I don't mean to trivialize it. I mean, but see, that's all we're doing. And yet it takes on these importance and blah, blah, blah. And that's what's stressing us out. Instead of just, you know, I go there every day and I read and I write and I read and I write. And the end of the day, I get in my car and go home. See, why can't we do that?
That's simple.
Yeah. What's your name again?
Kai.
Yeah, again, Kai. It is that simple. It really is. But we have just... Again, having said that, doesn't mean you're going to, you know, but that's the process. You know, how can I just let things be, you know, be present to whatever I'm doing, when I'm reading, when I'm writing, when I'm thinking, and then just let it go, you know, look out the window. Sky's still there, right? Clouds are there. Life has gone on. I mean, I'm not the center of the universe, and this is not the most important thing, you know. I mean, we treat our activity as if it's like of earth-shaking appointments. I mean, even Obama, he goes off and plays golf. I mean, he takes vacation. Right? He's the, you know, I mean, these guys, right? I mean, we're just little peons, aren't we? Just reading and writing. But that's, you know, and we got to keep things in perspective. Okay, thank you. And last but not least, I know we have kids coming in. Yes.
For all the other people, because my questions are mine, somewhere along the way, I don't know if somebody told me or I just picked it up on my own, that I had to have an observer.
Mm-hmm.
And who watches everything I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I'm going off track, that won't look good, or that doesn't work, or that never shut up.
What, it never shuts up. So this is not an observer. This sounds like it's an observer slash critic. That's different. That's, yeah, and see, this is not that. Good. It is said that mindfulness is the capacity to recognize, right? Mindfulness is often compared in the traditional literature to a gatekeeper. That you know, sort of in the, this is just an analogy, but sort of like in the front of your mind, there is some kind of self-awareness that knows what's arising. Okay? And that can tell, a positive thought from a negative thought. Right? Something to be cultivated, right? And something not to be cultivated. Right? Something to be let in, and something to be kept out. That's mindfulness. But it's just kind of a self-awareness. It's an observer, but not in any critical sense, not in any judgmental sense, not in any, there's no commentary, it's just noticing. And that's that's a necessity. In the same way, going back to our gardening analogy, I mean, you have to know if you want to garden the difference between a weed and one plant that you want to cultivate, right? It's a choice. We call these things, we don't want to cultivate weeds, and we call the things we want to cultivate the plant. You know, so there has to be that mechanism of mind that recognizes the difference. That's all. Then we just get on with cultivation. So to have a capacity in your mind that has the criteria to know, you know, what is the thought that ennobles my mind and what is the thought that just drags it into the garbage heap, right? You know, what is a way of thinking or a mindset that is healthy for me and what is, you know, same way with like food. You know, I mean, you go to Publix, well, how do I know healthy food from unhealthy food? How do you know it? What? I mean, how do you know it? This is sort of a question. Well, you read the ingredients, right? But you have a criteria. Right, you've already thought, I'm not going to eat what? I'm not going to eat processed food, or I'm not going to eat foods with sugar. Right? That's not good. All right? So now you have a criteria, and you just, you know, you don't have to kind of go on about things. You're just looking at the ingredients. You go, oh, sugar, that's all. I know the chaff from the wheat. I know the healthy from the unhealthy. I know what I want to eat and what I don't want to eat. That's all. See, that's, in meditation and mindfulness, that's that gatekeeper. But it doesn't, you know, go, what kind of idiot are you to even, you know, I can't believe you've been eating sugar your whole life, and I can't believe that you're even interested, you know what I mean? That's that kind of stuff. That's nonsense. Right? It's totally unhelpful. It actually is the critical mind. I mean, those are the kinds of thoughts and mind states that we don't want to let in, because they're not beneficial. And we certainly don't want to cultivate them, do we? If you notice they're already in, if you notice a weed has already gotten into your garden, what do? Pull it out. Right? You don't have to have a major meltdown. Right? You don't have to be self-critical. You just pull it out. Very simple. Okay? Does that answer your question? So, thank you all very much.